Firstly, what was your involvement in WDR 2004?
So I was a member of the core team, and I was bringing mostly the health perspective because I'm a medical doctor and a health economist, and I was bringing the provider's perspective because I've been a provider, and a lot of Africa experience because I worked a lot.
And what for you was the most important thing about WDR 2004?
For me, the WDR 2004 was game-changing in the way he brought the issue of politics and political economy in the discussion on service delivery, and the way also it squarely said that citizens are at the center of service delivery. They are both the principal. The core principle as well as the beneficiary.
And what do you think we've learnt in the last 10 years?
I think a lot of the messages of the WDR have been validated. What we've learned is the incredible importance of information. Technology has helped with that, with the explosion of the new technologies, the mobile phone and all the social media. And I think I think a lot of the messages of the WDR have been, for example, exemplified in the Arab Spring, the way you can see an entire generation of young people expressing their disenchantment with the way government is run. Otherwise, I would say what we've learned over the past 10 years is that you really need to work with a really deep understanding of what are the societal and political dynamics of a country if you want to change service delivery. And that the importance of the equity question is central. We see it today. It's universal. It's almost in any society of the discussion about the role of the state. Where does the public subsidy need to go and how you make societies more equitable? I think the equity question has become even more prominent than it ever was.
How important do you think aid is in determining the future of service delivery for the poorest people?
Well, clearly, I mean, the facts are out there. The importance of aid is declining just because the proportion of expenditures that come from aid is declining as countries grow. And now what has changed over the past decade is the emergence of Africa as the last frontier of economic growth. So with 10 years of steady growth in Africa and with the emergence of China and India as middle-income countries, aid is naturally getting less important. And that calls for redefining its role and redefining what it can do. And in my view, there are probably two avenues that are naturally coming. One is aid as having a catalytic effect by funding some very specific critical gaps. And funding innovations, helping countries develop local knowledge. And the second part is global public goods, is funding what the global community, the humanity as a global community finds important. And clearly now we're talking about some global health issues, we're talking about climate change, and there are other aspects, including thinking about what could be universal aspiration to equity that probably has to be part of what aid is helping with. But the role of aid as really bringing significant amounts of financing, I think, is going to disappear.
What do you think we need to do differently in fragile states to get services working for the poor?
Well, fragile state is a very vexing issue, in the sense that I think we as the development community have, I think, largely failed And probably one of the reasons is we have really come approach fragile states with a received model about what a state should be and what it should be doing. Whereas by definition, these are countries where the modern state has not emerged, or has emerged in a very imperfect way, and rather than being a benevolent state, is often a predatory state and dysfunctional state. So I think what we've learned is that what is important is to support the development of service delivery, that service delivery is the goal. Getting services to the poor is the objective. The objective is not necessarily to create a government with all the bells and whistles, and which may end up being at best an empty shell, or maybe at worst a level of predation or a level of violence or a level of negative interaction with service delivery. So I think what we would need to do differently is really focus on building service delivery from bottom up, with communities, with civil society, with local agents, and really building institutions, local institutions, being much more reliant on the private sector, reliant on autonomous institutions, even if they are public, but with a very strong level of autonomy. And in my view, the challenge is really to build state resilient service delivery. That's service delivery that, yes, can be helped by the state when the state is playing a good role, but can resist the state when the state is actually playing a negative role.
So if you had to sum up what it would take to deliver services that work for the poor in 60 seconds, how would you do it?
Well, of course I have the perfect solution, but I'm thinking of some key elements. I would say probably the first one is a very strong client power or citizen power of a provider. It's in what the WDR calls the short route, the market route, for me is, you know, precedes the long loop of voice and government and government instructing providers. That in the history of society, service delivery is first and foremost delivered by the market. So I think we need to find ways, whatever system is developed, to keep to have the user and the citizen be able to use this route, that if they want to purchase services, if they want to access services, they actually can. And then everything sort of stems from here. Now, of course, when it comes to poor people and they don't have the money power, the question is how you address that problem, that they cannot purchase what is essential for them. And then we go to some other elements, and I think one of them is really the building of trust in societies and in collective action, which is something that is about, of course, developing information and rules and of course democratic rules. And then probably I would say is the building in that, the willingness to share and the willingness to cross-subsidize, which stems from that building of trust and building of homogeneity and need for collective action. And last, in my view, but not least, and this is where often services fails, is the importance of developing institutional and professional norms. That the voice of citizen is critical, it's important, it's sort of democratic loop, the feedback loop is critical. But it won't have any impact if there is the power imbalance remains. In healthcare, it's very clear. Doctors typically are, first, there is an asymmetry of information. They know much more than the patients or the people. Doctors are usually more wealthy. They come from usually more educated backgrounds and more powerful backgrounds. They are usually in positions of power. They're part of the elite. So that power imbalance usually cannot be addressed just by information. So one important aspect that probably has been underinvested in is really the the change within the professions, the professional ethics, working on professional ethics, professional norms, which is something that certainly has happened in most OECD countries, because services developed on the basis of the guild and the professional associations and the professional ethics and norms being developed. But you see that in some other countries. I'm thinking in Thailand, for example. The entire history of health sector reform in Thailand has been incredibly influenced by the Rural Doctors Association, where you basically had medical doctors who decided that they wanted the system to change and work better for the poor, work better for the rural areas, just generally establishing norms that were altruistic and fostering equity. That change did not happen through the voice, but happened through a group of reformers that actually changed the institutional norms. And I think that's, in many countries, very fundamental.